The oldest rule of real estate is location, location, location. But the same principle probably applies to politics, whether it's candidates running for office in places that they don't live in or saying things intended for a select audience that end up making it into the national media. New York Times columnist Gail Collins joins us now, as she is doing every Tuesday until Election Day, for the latest edition of How Did Politics in America Get So Weird? Her book, When Everything Changed, is coming out in paperback at the end of this month. It's published by Little Brown and Company. And I'm very pleased to welcome Gail Collins back to our show. Hi.
Thank you. Hi.
Is it possible to start off this week's discussion without addressing a candidate we spoke about last week, Carl Paladino?
Boy, Carl Paladino, we knew you not only weeks ago, but now our entire lives are determined by Carl Paladino's craziest thing of the day.
Well, over the weekend, he spoke before a group of Hasidic Jewish leaders in Williamsburg, and let's hear what he had to say, as captured on tape by WNYC's own Ozzie Pebara.
And don't misquote me as wanting to hurt homosexual people in any way. That would be a dastardly lie. My approach is live and let live. I just think my children and your children will be much better off and much more successful getting married and raising a family. And I don't want them to be brainwashed into thinking that homosexuality is an equally valid or successful option. It isn't.
So what was the big problem there, the use of the word brainwashing?
Well, I think, you know, there's a thought pattern problem here. I have no problem with homosexuals. I would never want anything bad to happen to them, but I want to make sure that all of our children know that it's an illegitimate lifestyle choice. I mean, it doesn't quite track for me. I don't know.
And he did use the word pervert, although he said pervert.
Yeah.
He suggested that he doesn't want homosexuality taught in schools. I don't know if the course called Gay 1.1 has ever been part of the New York school's curriculum. And even the conservative New York Post had an editorial in which it said, the next time Paladino opens his mouth, his campaign manager needs to wrestle him to the ground and shove a sock in it.
That's about the bottom of as far as you can go. And, you know, there was a strange subtext to this that I've never quite been able to figure out. Apparently he claimed that the Hasidic community that had invited him had added things to his speech that he didn't agree with that were even more homophobic, and that it was then passed out to reporters. And he was very upset about the fact that reporters were reporting that as if he had said that. And I think, although you can correct me, I think that the women reporters were not allowed to go into the event because it was in the synagogue and it was for men only. I mean, so you're putting a really high bar here on the behavior of the reporters, I think.
The sentence he took out is, there's nothing to be proud of in being a dysfunctional homosexual.
That would be the sentence, yes.
In the speech and in subsequent appearances after it, he attacked Andrew Cuomo for attending a gay pride parade with his children. And let's take a listen to a clip of Mr. Paladino at the Columbus Day Parade.
Have you ever been to one? The men wear little Speedos and they grind on each other. Would you take your children there?
He said,
I don't think so.
Why would a politician be concerned about what gay men wear at a parade?
I don't know, and he said at some point that he knew what the parades were like because he stumbled on one in Toronto or Montreal. The idea of sort of stumbling on a gay pride parade in Canada and making it define your candidacy is, I think, about right for where we are with Carl Paladino right now.
Do you think this is his macaca moment, or did that occur earlier?
Oh, the macaca moment we have been past, and this is the quadruple macaca. We are just so far beyond the macaca moment with Carl Paladino.
But I want to get back to that prepared text. Do you think that politicians give speeches that are intended just for the group that they're speaking to, never meant to reach a larger audience, even if reporters are present, and then have to pay the price?
Well, the whole idea, I mean, it goes back among many, many, many other things to the fact that this guy's campaign is, you know, completely irrational. You don't do any of those things. You don't give a speech to a group with reporters there and not expect it to be reported. You don't let people who are having you come for a visit put things into your speech. You don't have things in your speech you haven't read. It just goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the issue of location, let's talk about candidates who are running for office in places that they don't actually live. New York has had many examples of this, like the questions about whether State Senator Pedro Espada lived in the Bronx. That probably were the least of his problems, and he lost primaries. But how does someone think they can get away with being representing a place that they don't live in, even if the area is terribly gerrymandered?
Well, you have this problem. This is the first year that I've seen two of these, you know, sort of simultaneously working their way out. In Maine, you've got a candidate for governor who has another house in Florida and who took homesteader tax exemptions, which are only available to your primary residence in both states. So it suggests an inability to make up his mind at minimum. And then in West Virginia, even more interestingly, you have a Republican candidate for the Senate who not only took homestead exemptions in Florida, but who has his wife and children in Florida, and the kids go to school in Florida. Now, that would seem to me to rise to the level of a serious diss to West Virginia, and that's playing out there. And, of course, as you said, we've had this in New York so many times, usually involving somebody who wanted to represent the Bronx in some way, but had family elsewhere. I remember my very favorite time of that in the history of the world was a guy who was running, I think it was for district attorney, but I'm not sure anymore, in the Bronx. And his family, again, he had a house in the suburbs, and his wife and his children were there, and the kids were going to school there. And his argument was that he was separated from his wife, and that's why he was in the Bronx. And his opponent spent the entire campaign arguing that they were happily married. And this was the great negative advertisement of the campaign, was this guy really loves his wife.
Well, I think John Race, who the West Virginia candidate who owns homes in West Virginia, Colorado, and Florida, said something like, "My wife isn't running for Senate. I am."
Yeah, but if you're presuming you're still married, and the kids aren't running for the Senate either, but there does seem to be a suggestion as to where you put your real preference when. And the guy is extremely, extremely rich. I've heard him argue that the kids are getting, you know, better opportunities for education in Florida. When you're as rich as this man is, your kids have good opportunities for education wherever you live.
Now, why wasn't this an issue when he ran for Senate in 2006?
Well, he seems to continually lose these races. I mean, you basically have a guy who's been a kind of perpetual candidate losing things, and this is the first time I think that he's actually looked like he might win, and so the Democrats are going completely nuts and are pushing this very, very hard.
And pushing things like he has a driveway that looks like it's made with marble.
Yes, pink marble. And then he came back and said, no, it's peach tile, and I didn't pick it out anyway. And this is not the kind of argument you really want to be having at this point in time. This is also the same guy who got caught hiring actors to play West Virginians having a conversation at the coffee shop, and whoever put out the casting call said in the ad that he wanted people wearing hickey kind of looking clothes, and that's kind of been reverberating there too. I do feel if I was a West Virginian, I'd feel slightly disrespected by this campaign.
Your newspaper, the New York Times, had an editorial about Carl Paladino that went through his career and pointed out that many of the things he's campaigning against are things that have helped him become as rich as he is along the way.
Yeah, he's basically campaigning, and if you look at where he's getting the support that he's getting, and he's not getting much, it's from amen. He's got the hugest gender gap in the history of electoral politics, I think, and mainly from people upstate who always feel sort of very angry and very ignored and very, you know, unloved by the rest of New York, but yet he's a poster boy for wasteful spending on economic development projects in upstate New York that the person who develops them then does not create any jobs from, which are his own projects. It's a mess.
We have another clip, or actually two clips, one of Carl Paladino and one of Andrew Cuomo arguing over who's the better father. And I think that may very well be the most important issue in this gubernatorial race.
He's probably the last person I'll take advice from on how to raise my daughters.
I think he's already displayed his lack of interest maybe in being a good father.
Mr. Paladino.
That was in regard to the gay pride parade, where Carl Palladino said that Andrew Cuomo shouldn't have brought his daughter along.
We have gotten to so many points in this particular campaign that I thought I would never hear in a major election. You don't say somebody's not a good father unless they've been arrested or something. You just don't do this stuff. If only Carl Palladino had a house in Florida. I think we should go and look and find out if he's got one.
Do you realize that we have done this whole thing without mentioning Christine O'Donnell even once?
I think this is a good thing.
Is there anybody else we should be paying attention to?
Well, this is, you know, I've got to say that Sharon Engel this week, although she, you know, it's again, like Christine O'Donnell, it's hard not to find. She made a speech or a remark at a Tea Party rally in Nevada, in which somebody got up and asked about the Muslim takeover of the United States, which is the point where any sane candidate says, sir, stop, you know, take a deep breath, you don't know what you're talking about. But she started then babbling on about how certain towns in America were being run by Sharia law, and this had to stop.
One in Michigan and one in Texas that doesn't even exist.
One in Texas that doesn't exist, that hasn't existed since 1975 when it was incorporated into Dallas. And she's sitting there talking about how towns in the United States are run by a conservative Islamic law, which it's not true. It doesn't happen. It's terribly divisive. How many bad things can you put together in one statement? I just can't imagine.
Is Harry Reid that bad a candidate that they are still neck and neck?
Yeah, that's the amazing thing. You know, I have such sympathy for Nevada because they clearly want Harry Reid to go away. They are tired of him. They don't like him. This was going to be the year that he went away, and his son is running for governor. It's like there's Reids all over the place, and you have great sympathy for them. But people of Nevada really think again, this woman is just incredible.
Well, this means that you always have a lot of material for your columns. That must make you happy.
As they say, yeah.
And we're pleased that it gives you a lot of material for our conversations. We'll be doing this up to Election Day, and I suspect that as the races heat up, if anything, we'll be hearing more outrageous things, although I think claiming that two cities in America are run by Sharia law is pretty incredible.
I think we made a good start this week.
Gail Collins is an op-ed columnist for The New York Times. She used to be the head of the editorial board, was it?
Yeah, the first woman ever editorial page editor of The New York Times.
And her columns appear twice every week, except when we read, unfortunately, Gail Collins is... What are the Times words there? Gail
we
is
say off for the day.
Is off for the day. Which...
After many, 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 many controversies, we settled on that as the all-purpose thing to say when people aren't writing.
Thank you so much for being with us today and not being off for the day.
It's a pleasure.
And Gail Collins' latest book, When Everything Changed, will be released in a new paperback edition at the end of this month by Little Brown.